The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton.
Sam, why don't you lead us in today?
Today, we are going to be chatting about a concept that I feel like maybe we've spoken about in a roundabout way without ever like specifically labeling it this. I think even like in yours and my private conversations. Amanda sent me a video, which is a clip of Elise Myers in, I think it's a podcast interview.
Yes, she was on Victoria Garrick, I think is her last name.
Yeah, the Real Pod?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And Elise was talking about how she feels that she was in a place where she was over-therapized. Mm-hmm. And she was, essentially, it was leading her to overthink things, leaned much more into intellectualizing rather than just like being in the moment and feeling your feelings and kind of letting yourself be a human. And so we both thought that that was an interesting topic to kind of like bat around and see.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing I want to say about it is that I think there's a really big misconception that intellectualizing is therapy. And I would say, like, if you are intellectualizing, you're not really digging in and doing some of the change work, the process work of therapy, because intellectualizing by definition is a defense mechanism where you are overthinking about things and trying to analyze things so much that then you avoid and don't have to actually feel what you're feeling or even kind of like make a plan for changing. I'm not saying people aren't over-therapized. I think many people are. And I have been one to talk about sort of, you know, in this day and age, I have fears sometimes that in the plethora fire hose of self-help content, we can become so focused on ourselves, we lose perspective and balance. And I equate it a lot of times to sometimes like my experience with chronic pain, because I have gotten so focused on my chronic pain that then I have become hypersensitive, hyperfixated on it, even hypervigilant, where probably, you know, my body can, because it's like on alert, it can misinterpret soreness as danger and then like pain, when it's not even necessarily that's what's happening, because I'm so hypervigilant scanning my body all day for pain, for example. And I think the same thing can be applied with mental health. If we are very hypervigilant about our trauma, or we have this narrative that we are broken, there's something wrong with us, we can search for evidence of, oh my God, that there's another thing I can't do, or there's another weakness I have, or there's something else I need to work on and fix. So I think that's real. If you're stuck in intellectualizing and you're with a great therapist, they should be able to kind of pull you out of that a bit.
My frustration, I think, with the intellectualizing conversation is I don't think we've provided clear examples of what that really is. And I think there's at least some of the people that I've worked with, and I think even my own personal interpretation of some content out there, is it's almost like if you have any talk processing around something, that means you're intellectualizing. And I have my own explanation of it, but you just so beautifully described that. I would love to hear how do you define the difference between talking in therapy, working through things, versus intellectualizing?
Totally. And I think it's one of those things that is really hard to explain because intention matters so much. And then I'm going to make it even more complicated for people and say it's not just intention, it's like subconscious intention, which is just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I can tell when a client is intellectualizing, or I intellectualize. Like, I am a big intellectualizer in therapy. And it's not just about talking. It is about, I am like analyzing myself while I'm talking. And a lot of times with intellectualization, you're not taking moments to like sit with what's happening. You're disconnected from your body. Talking in circles, which is also different from being like, oh, this is interesting. I wonder why I might be feeling this way. There's like a back and forth exploration happening with you and your therapist, or even an exploration happening with you and yourself in a journal, versus intellectualizing is spinning so hard because you just want to find the right answer of why you are messed up. And you have this belief a lot of times that once you find it, you'll be fixed. Mm. What is your definition?
I always try to stress people that I'm like, at some point you have to think critically about what you've been through, because a lot of times you've never put words to it. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some therapists who put a lot of pressure on the somatic, right? Which is like to be in your body and feel what is happening internally, both physically and emotionally, right? And kind of tap into how those are connected. And I've seen some therapists kind of say like, well, talk therapy is useless because you just need to tap into your body. And I'm like, well, at some point you have to be able to verbalize what is actually happening within your body to make sense of it. Because if you just sit there and you feel sad and you're crying and you feel your stomach in knots, okay, experiencing that is great. What was the thing that brought that up within you? And we have to be able to like verbally say, because we're verbal creatures with frontal lobes, like, oh, okay, that's why that makes sense. Where I start to classify intellectualism is when the thought process always loops back to minimizing. That's where I put my red flag up of like, ooh, I think we're trying to shield this. When it seems that every explanation that we go through eventually loops back to why it's okay, why it's not a big deal, why it's fine. I think from a therapist perspective, like there's a very fine line of when you intervene with that, because I've had some people work their own way through it.
Yeah.
I think if you notice you're doing this in yourself, that like you find your way like, well, it's not a big deal. I know I felt that way, but it's not a big deal because I did this and I did this and I did that and I did that. I did that on a personal level with my brother for a lot of years. I really intellectualized what I felt towards him, what I felt about my experience. And I shrouded that in, well, it's okay because he can't help himself. We were doing the best we could. Or like, my parents were also drowning and they didn't know what to do, right? All categorically true statements, but dismissive of the fact that I had an emotional reality in that experience that I had kept frozen for a lot of years. And I had to allow myself space to experience that, even to the point, to give like a very specific example, in my journey of understanding that, there were moments where I had to allow myself to like legitimately hate my brother. I had to honor that feeling when he was like having a meltdown, being aggressive, being completely unmanageable. I had to allow myself to respect, like, I am so angry and hateful that I have to deal with this. And I had to allow that to exist for some time. And that was really uncomfortable because it's really hard to sit in that space while you're trying to help somebody while feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of the journey, is like learning how to acknowledge both. I give that example because I think there's a lot of people that come up against certain circumstances where they're like, well, it's not possible for me to acknowledge the full breadth of my feeling about this because it'll get in the way of me doing what I want to do, mm-hmm. or showing up the way I want to show up. And I think the question that I have about that when we start talking about intellectualizing is, well, do you feel like you're even showing up authentically right now? Because with intellectualizing, you can really end up almost robotic in your thought process and the way you work through things. And it just feels like everything is kind of glazed over with this avoidance, right? Like, well, there's a reason why, and the reason's fine because the reason justifies what the feeling is. So thus the feeling doesn't have to be that intense.
Totally. You're using logic to not be present in your emotions at all. Rumination, you are in your emotions a lot of times. That emotion might be anxiety, which is probably the most common emotion, I would say, that comes with rumination. But you are spinning and spinning and spinning and trying to say why. And even when you figure out why, that's not enough. And then you have to ask why again. Or why didn't this happen? Why did this happen? And you are really spinning your wheels and stuck and using this process of spinning your wheels to feel like you're doing something without having to do anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really with rumination too, it's like your personal feelings and a lot of times the negative aspects versus with intellectualizing, you're way more focused on logic and abstract thinking, almost as though you're analyzing your life from this like bird's eye view, mm-hmm. versus being in it, right? You could analyze your life as, you know, I did this because of my parents and because life was hard for them and they didn't mean it and blah, 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 which is different than the example you gave of I'm sitting in it and I feel this has an impact on me. And I would say, people who struggle to be in touch with their emotions tend to intellectualize a lot. And I think that's why I thought this topic was good because, right, because she said she feels like she's over-therapized because.
I think it was just more into relation of her realizing she was overthinking everything that she did and kind of like over-analyzing interactions and the way she behaved, trying to find, oh, did I do that correctly or was I whatever.
Yeah. So it sounds like, yes, I think she was intellectualizing to escape from her feelings. It also sounds like there may have been some spinning sort of as well.
Yeah. I do think if we're talking about a concept like being over-therapized, I think there does come a time where you have to be able to flex and say, could I do this on my own? That is a conversation that I would have if you are in therapy currently and you might be feeling that way. That is a conversation that I would have between like you and your therapist to kind of figure out like, is weekly too much, mm-hmm. right? I would say half of my caseload right now is on an every other week mm-hmm. basis. And that's okay because 2 weeks for where they're at in their life, what they're going through, that feels like a good amount of time to kind of go through some things, try some things, kind of experience life on their own. And then we come back together and we chat about it.
And you guys already have a rapport built yes. up, which yes. is different, I think, than right. sometimes people want to start off with a very spread out cadence, but you never actually.
You can't get there.
Exactly.
When we say in the beginning of therapy, it should be weekly. I think there's a lot of people right now that think that that's like a cash grab and mm-hmm. it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
I need, as a professional, I need consistency in talking to you and getting to know you and checking in. And also, if this is the first time you're cracking open these cans of worms, that is a lot and that is overwhelming. And to have someone every 6 days, essentially, checking in with you, seeing how we're doing, seeing what came up after session, right? that allows you to build that relationship that maybe 2 or 3 months in, depending on what you're working on, you could say like, hey, for financial reasons, I need every other week. Yeah. Is that something we could do? Of course. Or I think I need more time to think on things and process things. Okay, great. Let's do that. Because there's a comfort there and a familiarity of backstory of how the person needs support, what they like in terms of support. And that has to be built in a consistency at first. And I think sometimes that's a little scary because it's scary to feel like that you are now accountable to someone mm-hmm. for your inner world. And with that said, with the idea of being over-therapized, my question is, what are you feeling over-therapized on? Is there something you feel like you're talking about too much? Mm-hmm. Is there something else that you are talking about this thing more to avoid having to talk about that? If you are hyper-fixated on your interactions or mm-hmm. what you do or what you don't do, my thought is not necessarily over-therapized. Are we using the wrong technique to help you cope? Because I think there's a lot of people that go to therapy consistently to have a check-in mm-hmm. and they don't express a feeling of being over-therapized. Now, I think there's a line for anybody where if it feels like you're just showing up and you have nothing to talk about, then maybe you're in a season where you're not ready to take advantage of therapy. And that's not bad at all. Like, you genuinely might be in an okay state of mind, and that's fine. That's where we'd like everybody to be. So feel free to like take breaks and say, could I check back in with you in 3 to 4 months, right? And kind of see how that goes. I have a couple clients doing that right now. Like we're starting to stretch out the sessions more and more to see how that goes, to see if they want it more consistently or if they're ready to phase it out. Mm-hmm. None of this has to be done overnight. And I think a lot of people have that assumption that like the only way I can do therapy is I have to do it weekly or I can't do it at all. And it's like, therapy is about what works for you, babe. Mm-hmm. So if you are in therapy and something is feeling like it's not clicking or it's not working, talk to them.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, that's like my biggest tip. And I think the biggest thing that prevents people from, mm-hmm. I mean, besides money and insurance reasons, from having a good experience in therapy, I think so many of us are so afraid to tell our therapist something, to say no, to share what works for them, what doesn't, to bring something up that's challenging or hard. And I'm always like, the best moments mm-hmm. in therapy happen from those difficult, vulnerable places, from where there is friction, because then the relationship gets stronger. And also, this is a collaborative relationship. It's not just me telling you what to do. You are very much an active participant. So it's really important to be honest with your therapist. And I think too, to your point, Sam, I think some people are afraid to tell their therapist they want to drop down or tell them about something because they're afraid the therapist mm-hmm. will just say no. And obviously, a therapist is entitled to their clinical opinion, depending on what you're dealing with, right? If you're struggling with getting sober, you have severe trauma, you have other big things going on, you've been in like multiple crises, they can give a clinical recommendation that they think you need to see them more often. But in general, like, your therapist is really there to support you and mm-hmm. help you work through what's important. Even if they have a different opinion, it is like their job essentially to understand and support your opinion of what you think is going on in your life too. So we have to hold both of those things at the same time.
And also, like, be prepared that, are you wanting to stop therapy because you don't need it? Or have you hit on something that you don't feel prepared to talk about?
Mm-hmm. Or are you genuinely like, maybe it is that. And it's like, okay, like, that's fine too. I think we go through phases. You just had a baby, you have a big upheaval happen where you're not in the right headspace to dig into something. And that is okay too. It's just like owning it.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is, like, we can hit upon something and the hitting upon it is enough work for the moment.
Yeah.
And I think I tell people all the time, I'm like, guess what? We can just look at this right now. We don't have to do anything with it. We can just look at it. And then we get a little down the road and it's like, could we touch it? Right? Could we put up like an index finger to it and see what happens with that? But like, have the confidence to be collaborative in that space and say like, oh, this feels like a lot. Mm-hmm. And your therapist might push a little bit and say, what about it is feeling like a lot? But allow yourself space to explore all of that and then use that information to make the decision that's best for you. Because I've had clients who stuff comes up and they're really resistant to it at first. And we kind of challenge a little bit and they realize like, oh, I've just always been resistant to this, right? Like that's just my baseline. Or I've had other people come up where all of a sudden they're able to see something clearly. And they're like, I think I need to sit with this for a little bit before we go there. Okay, great. What are the other things that we've been talking about that you want to circle back to? Or do you need to take a couple weeks off and kind of process and then come back when you feel ready? Like, I think all of this is saying sometimes the online discourse, as it does with anything, it becomes this binary. It becomes this very rigid, black and white, all or nothing. It's either this way or it's either that way. And that's not it. You have your individual experience in your individual life, and you get to be collaborative of what works best for you and your scenario. Every single one of my clients on my client load is different in what we're working on, the way it impacts them, what they are concerned about, what they aren't concerned about. And that's my job to field that. It's not your job to try to fit into one specific mode or thought process or concern. Your job is to show up authentically. And I will meet you there.
I agree. The other thing, Sam, I was thinking about is I find right in this whole are we over-therapized conversation, I find like there aren't that many people that I know that are like going to therapy multiple times a week for years.
Yeah.
Or even in like maybe they are in weekly therapy, but like 1 hour a week isn't that long to really spend on yourself.
No.
What I think we're in terms of like where we're over-therapized and what I see stops clients a lot in therapy is everything else they're doing mental health-wise outside of therapy. Like the sheer amount of content, self-help content sometimes, it's like we're injecting it into ourselves all day long. We're reading – like if you think about – like I have clients who they're reading multiple self-help books at once. They are in a parenting course. They listen to all these mental health podcasts. They're reading content that's mental health therapy content on social media. They're watching TikTok videos and YouTube videos on it. They're taking in so much information, so many different pieces of advice. And then it really sucks because sometimes then the work you're doing with them is like unraveling all of the self-help content they're injecting all week. So I think sometimes what we talk about as over-therapized isn't even necessarily about therapy itself. We're just like over-self-helped.
Yes.
We're like obsessed with trying to be better versions of ourselves and figure things out. Because even I'll bring it back to my pain example. It's not that I'm going to PT too much. It's that I'm getting massages. It's that I'm rolling. It's that I'm stretching compulsively. It's that I'm Googling about my symptoms. It's that I'm coming up with these theories about why this is happening to me. It's all of that. It is not the once a week PT I'm going to. It's we can't stand, I think, sometimes that the transformation isn't happening quickly enough. And we think that if we add a lot more content and we get help all week long in between, we will get there faster. And like anything, unfortunately, that's like, yes, there are some things that can be helpful and we bring them up. And I'm really grateful that a client is reading this book or I recommend something. But yeah, that's my biggest gripe these days is I think we're over-therapized because we're over-consuming self-help content.
I think that's one of the truest things you've ever said. And you say a lot of true things. So that says something. I actually like made a post about this. And of course, because the algorithm sucks right now, it went absolutely nowhere. But I said that I think where the self-help industry at large went wrong, and I include therapists in this. I absolutely 100% do. myself included, when I first started making content and when I think of the first bits of content I made, we threw out all of these tips and tricks and explanations and insights to things with absolutely no understanding of who those tips and tricks actually applied to. And so what's happened is people are seeing tips and tricks for people who have severe diagnoses of things, right? Like the tips that are listed are for people that are deeply, deeply struggling. And someone who is not in that category, someone who's more, would fall more in the center of the bell curve in terms of mental health, now thinks that those tips and tricks apply to them. And so I think people are feeling this need to overly care for themselves when they really don't need that level of weekly intervention or really like daily intervention. And also understanding that like there's no amount of optimization that's going to save you from experiencing life.
100%. I think that's a huge thing, is that we've, through technology and all these optimizations, we've been sold this lie that there is a perfect amount of mental health or even therapy that will protect you from the pain and suffering of being a human being, which is not possible. There is nothing that can take that away, because to be conscious, to be aware, is to be having pain, frustration, and emotion.
Yes. And I think that's what gets so vastly misunderstood about therapy, is good therapy is about helping you figure out how to navigate those things without having to minimize them. It's about being able to experience the full breadth of life, the difficulty, the joy, the pain, the devastation, the excitement, all of that, that entire spectrum, that you are able to better navigate that uncertainty and go with the flow more and not be so rigid and not feel so bowled over when you have those more negative experiences, right? And some just will. Some just will knock you right on your ass. And there is nothing that no amount of skill or insight or experience can prepare you for. Period. End of story. And this obsession with like, you got to do a cold plunge and like your morning routine and, you know, like you got to do this and you got to be doing this a certain amount of times a week. And like, no, none of that is going to lead to a different outcome than someone that just applies what is best for them and leaves the rest, or finds a routine that works for them that might not work for somebody else, but it works for them. There is no amount of optimization that is going to protect you from the human experience, period. End of story.
And we are all going to fall and fail and make mistakes and really struggle sometimes. And I think that's the problem, as you were listing like morning routines and cold plunges, right? This is where it all gets super muddy and complicated, because everyone now is creating wellness content. Your coffee, your local cafe,
yes.
coffee shop is saying, drink matcha, you know, because it'll help regulate your nervous system better. And your yoga studio is saying you need to balance your chakras. And this productivity coach is saying that their life changed when they started following, you know, this Pomodoro technique or whatever. And it is like, I do think that is just fundamentally one of the challenges of being a therapist and mental health and observing this content as a whole is, right, we mind and body are connected. So that gets blurry. And the line between having a mental health diagnosis and not having one is blurry and moves constantly and shifts. So this all does get messy. Like, it was easier in some ways 25 years ago. When it was like, you had a mental health diagnosis, you were mentally ill, right, or you were not. Right. And spectrums are great and helpful. And so many people are getting tools and access and words and language, which was needed and positively corrected. I just worry we are drowning in content. We don't even have a moment to sit with ourselves. Because, yeah, if you are, you know, it's very easy to intellectualize everything if you are constantly just ingesting tons and tons and tons of content
and just information, just information. I think you have to live. You have to allow yourself to be messy, to make mistakes, to like go outside and literally touch grass. Mm-hmm. And part of why you're spinning out is because you haven't given any energy outlet to that internal energy that you're just sitting on. So it's like, if you've been in your house all day, go for a walk. Just go outside. Stop looking for some like large, I don't even know what, like philosophical answer to like make sense of why you're feeling what you're feeling. No, you just haven't been outside all day. Go on your porch. Take a deep breath. Like sometimes it is that mm-hmm. simple.
Put your face out the window and breathe in the cold air if you can't go outside.
Literally, like do anything. Do anything that is not constantly consuming something. And I think if we even go back to so many people, let's talk about dating, friendship, yeah. third spaces, family relationships. So many people are so fearful of those spaces because of how emotionally fraught they are and how vulnerable those spaces are. And I get it. It's tough. And at some point, if you want to make friends, you're going to have to put yourself out there and you're going to have to get turned down a couple times, right? You're going to have to face being stood up by people. You're going to have to face realizing, oh, I put a lot of time and energy into that thing that's not worth it. Okay, I learned. I move on. I'm going to go invest in this friendship that shows me it's giving back to me, right? That is life. Same thing with dating. You are going to have bad dates. You are going to have bad experiences. That is something that people have gone through for time immemorial. Yes, there are larger issues right now with, I think, the expectations of men and the expectations of women are completely misaligned. And I, as someone who is in that scene, I empathize 1,000%. But I think so many of us are so afraid of having any of those experiences, we're just not engaging with it, period. We're just avoiding it. And getting online and consuming more content about people sharing their bad experiences about dating. And those are the only videos we see. And so now we're like, everything is screwed. Everything is hopeless. Why even try? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you have to go out and try. You have to go out and meet people. You have to go figure out how to talk to people. You have to figure out what it's like to flirt in person and how that feels. And you're going to feel like an idiot sometimes. And there's nothing you can do about that. Believe it or not, we are starting to think about Valentine's Day gifts, which I know sounds absolutely absurd because you just finished thinking of Christmas gifts. But I am going to make it very easy for you. This is not the typical chocolate or the typical flowers, which, let's be honest, the chocolate is mid, the flowers eventually die. So I have the answer for you. And these are the Cozy Earth Bamboo PJ Sets and the Sutton PJ Sets. Now, both of these sets, I have to be perfectly honest of, I have three pairs. I have three pairs of the Bamboo PJ set alone. These are the most comfortable pajamas I have ever worn in my life, hands down. And the crazy thing is, these pajamas are made from the same exact fabric as their sheet set. And if you've ever touched this fabric, it is so luxurious. It is so soft. It is made from the viscose from bamboo. So it's a very unique texture. I really can't even describe the softness, if I'm being totally honest, but anytime I put on these pajamas, I feel like I am sleeping in the most luxurious circumstances possible in my own home. Now, the reason why I'm telling you about this is because from today until February 8th, all of their pajama sets are BOGO, buy one, get one. And if you use our code, that is Nuance BOGO, you will ensure that you get the BOGO discount. So that's Nuance, N-U-A-N-C-E, BOGO, B-O-G-O, put all together, N-U-A-N-C-E, B-O-G-O, for BOGO pajamas. You will not regret this. These are incredible. Celebrate love every day with comfort that makes the little moments count. I can't wait to hear what you guys think about these.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm really glad you brought up the self-help industry, because I think I could not agree more. As we're like hashing this out, we're not over-therapized, we're over-self-helped. And this isn't even me trying to like come to defense of my profession, because I think there's a lot of us therapeutic content creators that do kind of contribute to the self-help problem 100%.
Mm-hmm.
However, this idea of like one more tidbit, one more tip, one more thing is going to give you, you'll finally know, right? You will know in all caps, bold, italicized, what to do. And it's like, no, implementation is what you have to do. Messy, awkward, bumbling implementation is what you have to do to get the life that you want.
Yeah, you have to learn the skill. At some point, you have to actually ride the bike, because you can learn how to ride a bike. You can read about it. You can study it. You can learn all the tips. You can watch every video, but you have to practice. And I know there are people probably listening that are like, I don't want to date though. I don't want to do this. And I think we're like, you don't have to. We're not saying you need to get into a relationship or you need tons of friends. Whenever I talk about community, people are like, I have a great group of friends and I don't want more friends.
Okay, awesome.
And I'm like, great.
Leave us alone.
This is not for you then. We're talking about the people who are upset and impacted and are like, I really want more friends. I really want to be in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Whatever, I really want a different career. I don't know what your thing is, but we're saying, yeah, studying it online, taking another course, right? And I am like offender number one at this. I read too much stuff. I'm always looking for a tip and a trick, and they don't work mostly. Right. But at some point, yeah, if you want something, you do have to practice and learn. And be in that skill, because it's like the same thing we've talked about with even scripts of like how to talk to a friend, how to you know, talk to a date, how to ask someone this, how to do that. Great. Like the script can be helpful with giving you ideas, but unless you're going to stand there and read the script, which is not going to be effective or helpful, you eventually have to open your mouth and talk and learn how to actually – there is nothing that will create presence for you in a conversation.
Mm. Mm. I think people just need – this might be off topic, but I think it's in the same like vein. I think people also are trying to find ways to like not be tired.
Mm.
And I think I'm starting to see a trend where people assume that if they do something and it makes them feel tired, that thing must be something not good, or there's something
Tell me more.
Or there's something bad about it. Because I think, you know, I've seen posts and stuff that's like, I'm sitting at my desk typing with a brain that was built to eat berries in a cave, or, you know, like, what makes you feel alive? What makes you feel energized? It's like, I think people have subconsciously picked up on this notion that everything good in your life should leave you feeling like you could fucking float. And this all or nothing thinking of, well, I'm so tired because everything in my life is hard, or things in my life aren't good. And I want to get to a place where I feel more peace, where I feel more joy, and my life feels fulfilling. And I just think that is the most unrealistic hunk of crap I've ever heard, because I can tell you right now, my job is insanely fulfilling. I have had some wraparound moments in the last few months with some clients who we've really gotten through some very clear experiences that have been very emotional for me in a very powerful way, and realizing like the depth of the work that we do and the space that we provide, and allowing myself a little bit of credit for helping that person navigate that. And let me tell you, at the end of the day, my brain is fried. I'm exhausted at the end of the day. And if I made the assumption that me being tired meant that everything about my job was bad, I would have had to quit 2 years ago and had to completely pivot. But then the problem would be the next job would make me tired too, because it's, I'm using energy. I literally have to use my brain every day. And that is why you have to sleep every night, because your body is designed to get tired over the course of the day, regardless of what you're doing or you're not doing. It's the same reason why you could lay on the couch all day and you're still tired at the end of the day.
Yep. 100%, Sam. And I think we can, for anyone who feels resistance coming up, I will acknowledge this and then dive back in. Trust has been eroded within communities. When we lose third spaces, when we lose communities, right, when we, with the rise of the nuclear family, there is less efficient division of labor. So we all have more to do, sort mm-hmm. of individually. It's what we were talking about on the, is it embarrassing to have a boyfriend, right? Like, when you are a single person, you have more work that you have to do to take care of yourself, rather than if you are a family or you're partnered, that work is split and you have someone to share it with. So I think that's happened on a society-wide scale. When we don't trust people, when we don't trust our neighbors, we don't have as many people to help us, and that makes us more tired. For yes. sure, that's happening. And I agree. I think we need to acknowledge that to be alive and to to participate in life is tiring. Yep. Is exhausting. And we forget sometimes, though, that doing things also can give us energy yes. back. Yes. I often don't want to wake up in the morning, but I don't often feel regret for waking up in the morning. You can be exhausted and tired and still, that's why you need to stop chasing happiness, and you actually need to try to focus on creating a life that is meaningful to you, whatever that is. Because I think part of what we're talking about also is we have this unrealistic expectation, I think because of influencers and wellness influencers specifically, that act like they've arrived and they are happy all the time and they're joyful and everything is amazing, that we will be able to get there if we self-help ourselves enough. And that's not true, not realistic, not possible. And what's actually really interesting, because I've dug into some of this research, is that the more the people who are most obsessed with happiness, that care the most about being happy and set that as a goal, are the people most likely to experience depression.
Right. Because happiness is an all or nothing emotion, if you think about it.
It's also an emotion. Can you imagine just wanting to feel one emotion forever?
God, no. And happiness is fleeting. That's part of the problem, because every emotion is actually fleeting. And I know some people are going to fight me with that. They're like, I've been sad forever. I'm like, I guarantee if I cracked open your brain, you oscillate through the day. It might not be a big oscillation, but you oscillate through the day, because that is literally the biological build of your body, your nervous system, and your brain, period. And I think I actually had a conversation with a client about this today, where we spoke about the difference between being happy and being content. Content allows for a spectrum. Content allows us to say, I'm happy with this over here. I feel fulfilled with this over here. I'm kind of struggling with this over here. But I'm allowing what's good over here to outweigh what I'm struggling with over here. Nothing is negating the other. And I think with happiness, the expectation is, if there's anything in my life that is making me feel sad or making me feel lonely or making me feel any sort of negative way, that means that is a thing that I need to somehow adjust or maybe even cut out of my life.
Yes, I love that. The also really fascinating part of this research, which backs up what you're saying, is that a lot of times the people that are most obsessed, like if you set happiness as a goal, you are often the most unhappy mm-hmm. in moments where you think you should be happy. Ooh. Because you have this experience of like, I've arrived. I made it. I should be so fulfilled right now. And when your expectations don't line up with the emotion, you get upset. Mm. And then you can't blame your circumstances anymore. Mm. Right? A lot of us feel like the reason I'm unhappy is because I don't have a boyfriend or I don't have friends or I don't have a good job or I don't have a nice apartment, whatever. So then when you get it and you're still unhappy, you blame yourself, mm-hmm. and then you feel way worse. Mm-hmm. But I love this idea of contentment, because to me, even just, I mean, I've heard the idea of like aim for contentment right. instead of happiness. But the way you described it, Sam, it just feels like this wide open space where multiple things can exist at the same time. And it's actually very helpful for me right now, because I've been stuck and beating myself up a lot lately about parenting and just how hard it is and how intense it is. And why am I not a better parent? Why am I not able to handle this more? When will it get better? Blah, 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 blah. And I think if I can kind of back up from it and be like, this is a season, this is hard, but like I am overall, like it kind of can make you acknowledge that what you have is good yeah. and right, even if it's not exactly going how you want it to feel.
Right. Right. Something being different from your expectations doesn't necessarily mean that that thing is inherently bad.
Yeah.
And I think parenting is a really powerful example, because I think it's the easiest place sometimes for people to have very high expectations for what it will be or what it won't be. And then mm-hmm. when those things bleed together, that is stressful.
And I think it's really easy to blame yourself yeah. just because you're like, especially if you have a young kid, you're like, I mean, this is who they are. And then you can go down rabbit holes of like, is this wrong with them? If I did this, if I took another course, if I learned another, but like, this is where my rabbit hole clearly mm-hmm. goes down of how can I fix this? How can I make this better? How can I enjoy this experience more? Mm. Where my husband is much more chill, because he's just like, yeah, she's a toddler. She's going to scream all the time and maybe there's nothing wrong. And mm-hmm. like, can we just meet her where she is and have fun with her and be playful with her? And like some days are going to suck and she's going to be in a bad mood. And that is the way it is, where obviously just me explaining that the energy is very different yeah. than me being like, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to make it better. Obviously, I'm not content in this moment.
Well, and I think that is trying to control a situation that we feel powerless in.
Totally.
And when we have somehow in our life been able to create the illusion that we do have control over things, the first time you come up against something that rips the duct tape off of that, that's a painful experience.
I think that's what parenting does for a lot of people, in my opinion. I've been trying to understand, like, what is it about parenting sometimes that is so – I mean, it's like so many levels. But it is, I think, one of the first experiences people have, especially I think of like women who are perfectionist, high achievers, have been able to hold their breath
yes.
and squeeze hard enough yes. to make themselves fit into anything and make anything happen. And then you like lose it in parenting and you have to surrender to it.
The anxiety that – parenting brings to people is like, I've just been trying to remind people, like, evolution is really hard to mess up. Like, your kid will eventually stand up, your kid will eventually walk, your kid will speak, short of something being legitimately neurologically wrong, which your doctor will point out to you. If you are loving and kind and patient and willing to repair, and you play with them and you listen to them and you engage in their interests and you take them out into the world, there are a lot of problems that you will skip over because you are just mm-hmm. simply living with them. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, the 17 children that I've raised, I know for this to be true.
Well, this is where I trip up, Sam, because like logically I know that. And then I'll give you the example mm-hmm. of my daughter is in swimming lessons. We're trying to get her to learn how to swim. It is a very long process. She is in this phase now. Every week I'm like, is it going to be better? She went through a phase of hating it less. And she's not doing the swim lessons where they're like, you know, they like throw them into the pool with clothes on. Like, she's actually learning how to swim. So I had more faith that she would like it eventually. Yeah. Most weeks she screams. She yells at the teacher. She told the teacher last week to get off of her. Like, whoa. It's in intense. It's intense. And I'm just like, I mean, if I had like, you know, heart rate data, I'm sure it would be really, really bad, which is why I don't allow myself a wearable device. But right. And after the lesson, I came out to the teacher and I was like, because I also have this dumb thing where I'm like, oh my God, the poor teacher, this is terrible. She must be having a miserable time. Maybe my kid is like way worse. Maybe this is the wrong time. Maybe we should stop. Yeah. all of that. So I came to her and I was just like, yeah, like, you know, I know this is really intense and it seems like it's been intense the past couple weeks. Is this worth it? Should we continue? What is your advice? And it was hard because she was kind of like, well, I think you guys just need to practice more. I think you're not practicing enough with her. Mm-hmm. I think you need to, like, you know, have her kick in the tub, make sure she doesn't watch TV before she swims, which she doesn't. Like, there was a lot of, obviously, I was asking what was wrong. So she probably wanted to give me tips. But with this, with a lot of, like, my experience in teaching of, like, parenting stuff, there is this onus that's sort of put on the parent, mm-hmm. of, like, well, it's happening because you're not doing something right. It's sort of the subtext of right. that. And I think that's what's so hard about our generation and parenting right now is the amount of people, even if you go offline and you say, I'm not going to read books, I'm not going to expose myself, you're up against things like that often where you feel like, shit, is this because I'm not, like, practicing hard enough with her? Even the teacher suggested that it's because, like, we don't have enough boundaries at home and we don't say no to her enough. She was like, maybe this is one of the only times she gets told no. And I was like, you know, I didn't say anything because whatever. She was kind about it. She was very delicate with the way that she phrased it.
Yeah.
And she delivered it within context of saying other things. If she's pushing back, she's testing boundaries, which is appropriate and true. But it's hard to not feel like it's your fault when those are the conversations that are being said to you often. And I can imagine if you have a child in school or daycare or things like that, that would be, you know, I'm lucky this is just like a once a week swim lesson right. of someone who I can sort of fire at any time.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's what's so hard. Mm.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's vulnerable. It's the most vulnerable thing in the world mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. be like, am I the problem?
Mm-hmm.
I think the optimization and now I think I'm starting to see people overcorrect of like, oh, now we're over-therapized. Now there's too much and we shouldn't talk about it at all. And it's like, no, it's that we haven't been talking about the right things from the beginning. That's the problem. Which, like, humans are fickle and humans like reactivity because it feels good and humans like quick fixes because it feels manageable. And most people are not trained at all or socialized at all in how to sit in the discomfort of duality, right? And so a lot of this is new for most people. And what I want to say is, like, a good life, a life that feels full to you, a life that feels intentional to you, meaningful, purposeful, whatever terminology you want to put to it, it's going to be exhausting. You're going to be tired. Mm-hmm. If you care to show up for your work and show up for your kids, you're going to be tired. If you care to show up for yourself and show up for your friends and show up for your family, you're going to be tired. Effort in and of itself is fatiguing because it's designed to be. That's why you go to sleep at night. I really want to stress that again mm-hmm. and again.
Your brain literally – I read this study. We still don't know why people sleep. And I read this study that it's because, like, your mitochondria, like, freak out.
Yeah.
If – they don't rest.
Like, let me go to bed.
They, like, blow up, like, or dissolve. It's very strange. They don't totally know.
That is fascinating. I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. I assumed there was just, like, mm-hmm. some answer that I didn't know about, but I didn't care to know about.
They think it's, like, evolution all the way back from, like,
because falling asleep
things would just
feels magical. That's the best.
But it's also really evolutionarily bad if you think about
it. Yeah, because you can,
like, you're super vulnerable. Like, you just get eaten pretty easily.
But anyway, today in my bed with my lovely cozy earth sheets, my door shut, temperature at a balmy 65. Hell yeah. Like, shut her down for the night, boys. Anyway, I think, yes, I just as you did earlier, like, I want to call attention to systems. Yes. Systems are a play. Capitalism sucks. Things are hard right now. I get that. I validate that all day long. And I think something that has been insanely powerful to me in this time is being radically accepting of my individual power and authority over my own life. And I think in the last couple of years, as I've enacted some massive changes in my life, it's been crazy to see how much control we actually have mm-hmm. over our life. We can't fix everything. We can't ensure a particular outcome. But we can decide we want to do something and then try to do that thing to the absolute best of our ability. Mm-hmm. And I've found, you know, in the last, how long have I been here? 7 weeks? 7 weeks? Mm-hmm. I have been nonstop, go, 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 go. I've been working. I've been seeing people. I've been doing things. I've been going places. I've been out and about. And I'm tired. And even yesterday, I had this panic moment where I was like, dear God, I feel body aches and chills. Please, please don't let this be happening. But I slowed down and took the night off and I rallied. And today I definitely feel better. But like, I'm tired. But at the same time, I set my life up that way because that's what I realized was missing from my life, was doing things, being social, like just living my life in a completely different way, in a way that I feel a little more stretched thin. I have to be a little more strategic with my time. I'm kind of adapting like some of my hours for therapy and changing like my time slots and things, but like, and like being more strategic with like when I see people or when I do social things, but like, I realized my life wasn't full enough before. My life was very quiet and very small. And I think for a long time, that felt very safe. And what I realized is like, oh, I'm bored out of my friggin' skull. And I need to be doing more. And doing more meant I was going to be more tired.
Yes.
Doing more meant I was going to have to be more aware of my schedule. Mm-hmm. And put myself out there and do new things and try new things and be out later than I normally would and whatever. And I know some of you listening to this are like, well, you're single, you get to have fun. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't matter. It's the same principle. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm saying like, okay, I work all day and then I go do things at night or I try things or I go to new places. It's the same thing for you if you work all day and then you go home and you really want to be more intentional with your kids. Mm-hmm. Or if you've decided to take on helping a parent with something, or you're showing up for your friends more, or, you know, like just because the situation is different doesn't mean the principle is different.
And don't underestimate your ability to adapt. I think we chronically underestimate it. And sometimes you will hit your edge and you'll be like, oh, there's my edge. And you know, physics isn't going to take me any further.
I need to stop.
I think sometimes too, and I will call myself out on this, some of my energy is spent when you're trying to control things and it is energy that you are burning and using. And I think if anyone listened to our What 2025 podcast episode taught us, I read this beautiful obituary of a woman who was talking about how her mom was just the most fun mom ever. And I said, I wanted to bring that energy. I want to bring in contentment. Also,
yes.
Because I think it's unrealistic for me to claim that 2026 is going to be the year of mischief.
No, I think that's a stretch for Amanda White, everybody. I think that's going out on a limb.
Maybe I can be content. And in contentment, I can be more playful.
Yes. There we go. I think to circle all the way back to the beginning where we said this was about being over-therapized and thinking too much. I think really like the theme of this in thinking of that is like twofold. One, self-help is great to a point, and it is okay to call in when we have become hyper-fixative and over-analytical of our mental health and what we're doing or what we're not doing, or if we're taking care of it in a way that actually isn't helpful, right? And we might need to like readjust. But then second, you could go to therapy for 10 years, and if you never implement anything that you're learning in there, it will feel useless. And at some point, if you want any, and I have said this until I'm blue in the face, and I will continue to say it because I think in 2026, I'm going to be saying it a lot more, but to your faces in person, I like truly the only way to do something is through being messy and being consistent. That is the only way that you are going to experience any type of sustainable transformative change in your life. Doesn't matter what area it's in, but at some point you have to start. At some point you have to accept that you're going to be new at something. And I'm tired of hearing like, well, I don't want to be new at something because I'm bad. It's like, yeah, okay, next.
Get comfortable at being bad at things.
Yes, you're going to be bad at it.
I think that's a good skill. Yes. Like if we stop living our lives for the arrival, for the finish line, for the goal, for what we think will happen, and we start living for the experience of it, you will be a lot more content.
All right.
All right, everyone. This was fun. Yeah. This was a fun journey.
If you could rate, review, share, subscribe, anything that you could do to get the word out. We had some like really incredible Spotify statistics that still kind of like blow our mind a little bit. And that's all because of you. So thank you. We appreciate you being here and listening.
I feel like the OGs are going to really like this episode.
Yeah.
Today.
I agree.
So we hope you enjoyed. Yes. We're on Substack also. We'd love to see you over there. Join us at nuanceneeded.substack.com. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, bye.